number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into, an excellent habit to get into. A couple of quick announcements, and then some interesting things in the news. I've gotten several emails from folks wanting to know what's the deal with Alien Seeker News, because they tried to go to the website and couldn't. There was no website. The deal is Alien Seeker News got hacked. Now, we went through this fairly recently, and we were getting hacked every single day. Every single day it lasted for about 10 days. And so every single day and almost all the night, I was re-uploading the site and just to be able to continue doing what we do. They got hacked pretty severely over at Alien Seeker News, and it's down until he can repair that. And my sympathies are with him. I know exactly what this feels like. It's not fun, and the people that do it, of course, are criminals. Don't care who they work for. They're criminals. if you have not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, please be sure you do that. Go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. And just subscribe to the K-Files e-zine. You'll see it. Red letters says K-Files e-zine. Takes a few seconds. Now, you're going to get, in response to that, you're going to get an automatic reply with a link that you have to click. You may have to copy and paste that link. It's very long. But you have to do that in order to activate your subscription. That's how we protect you and us against spamming. All right? And it's free. Absolutely free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. On the moon, big news. NASA says they have found uranium on the moon. And they're pretty excited about it. And one of the reasons they're excited about it is because they say, well, when we put colonists up there on the moon, they're going to need a power source. They are going to need to be able to generate power. And this would be, if there's uranium there, they could possibly generate power from, you know, a nuclear or atomic reaction, and then they would have power. Well, that is true. I think it's also interesting that there's nothing said here about helium-3. It's on the moon, and according to some guests that we have had on this show, we are mining, we humans, not just we the United States, but we humans are mining helium-3 already, according to some who have been on this show. Now, I don't know because I haven't been to the moon, but that's what some of the experts say. And it too can be used in a different type of nuclear reactor what we call a cold fusion reactor to generate electricity. All right, my guest this evening is Aaron Kaplan, and we're going to be talking about his analysis of a lot of things he's seen that tell him 2012 might be something to worry about. We'll be back right after this. My guest this evening is Aaron Kaplan. Now, Aaron Kaplan is a significant individual. And you know, all individuals are significant, but you know what I mean. He is a wave maker, and the reason that I say that is he has written a book that is not out yet, but is coming out very, very soon, and within I think a couple of weeks. We'll ask him when I bring him up online. But Aaron is a graduate of the College of Aeronautics, and he was employed for over 35 years in both the aerospace aircraft industry, working civilian and military projects, and also has done work in submarine technology. He was born in Berlin, raised in Israel, is fluent in Hebrew, and he has written this book called Deep Analysis. Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion, where he takes a look at certain events around the Earth and ask the question, do these signify an extraterrestrial threat for the future of humanity? Aaron Kaplan, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great. Aaron, when is the book due to be published or released?
Hopefully by the end of July.
By the end of July. So we're getting you before it's actually released. And so that means our audience is getting some advance notice here of what's in the book, and I think that's a good thing. Now, Aaron, the material that was sent to me from the publisher, from Marketing Services, and by the way, it's Ex Libris Publisher. The book exposes a universal plot where the governing bodies, historical scriptures, and clandestine operations all reveal one thing. What is that one thing?
What it reveals basically is something allegedly may take place on December 21st, 2012, which of course is a date many, many people speak about in a very strange way. The person that once said it best is Richard C. Hoagland, and when he was asked about a date, he said, it's going to be a hell of a hair day. That's his words.
It's going to be a what kind of day?
A hell of a hair day.
That sounds just like Mr. Hoagland. Okay,
something will take place that day, whether it's storms, planet alignment, magnetism, polar shifts. Nobody really exactly knows, but something will take place that day. The trick is, what's going to happen to us human beings that day? That's the key question.
All right, now your book gets into this universal plot involving, as the material says here, governing bodies, historical scriptures, and clandestine operations. According to this material, it all points to an alien DNA genetic experimentation that has been performed through abductions on a massive scale. Now, do you have evidence for that, or is this rumor?
Oh, no, lots of evidence from experts, And believe it or not, also in the Bible, and it's very clear, plain, in plain sight. The problem is that it's so plain that even the experts cannot detect it, but they're looking for something very difficult. But if you just look at keywords, it's right there. The whole thing really starts at Roswell, and it ends at Roswell. As funny as it seems, Roswell seems to be the key to solving the problem. That's where it originated. Depends how you look at it and how you interpret it.
Okay. Now, let's go back to what you were talking about, that it's in the Bible. And you brought up something that people don't see it because they're looking for something when they read from these books that are in this book, this collection that is called the Bible. They're almost always looking for something theological. They're looking for something spiritual. And, you know, I have taken the approach that whether this book is a holy book or not, it is a collection of ancient documents. And if you look at these ancient documents, they're written with words. Words have definitions, and it just says what it says. And when you do that, if you read it that way, it blows the lid off of a whole lot of really convoluted theology and tells a story that is more fantastic than Star Wars. That's the position I've taken, and that's the position our audience knows I've taken that position. And some people think that's a good position. Some people think that is straight from the pits of hell. Nevertheless, it's still written with words, and words have definitions. Now, you read Hebrew. You know, you speak Hebrew fluently. One of the people that was a major developer of the curriculum that is used in Israel to teach immigrants Hebrew was Dr. H. Leo Edelman, who was a friend of mine. And he's the one that turned me on to this idea. So let's talk about this. In this ancient document called Genesis, there is a story of extraterrestrial human hybridization. And this story has to do, a lot of people are familiar with this, has to do with when the sons of God came and saw the daughters of men that they were fair. They just took whichever ones they wanted and basically raped them. And then the offspring were monstrous. So let's talk about that. Tell us what you know about that, and then we'll move to Roswell and see what's the connection here.
Okay. The person originally is trying to decipher this mystery, if you recall, was Zakaria Sitchin and his book, The 12 Planets.
Mm-hmm.
He explained that approximately 450,000 years ago, some aliens came here, the Anunnaki, from planet Nibiru, tried to settle here. However, through the stay here, a certain group performed some mischief, maybe, and went hooray. And they had relations with a woman of Earth, and babies were born, giants. Now, the trick is this. We are told when those Nephilim fell to Earth, Nephilim simply means, in this case, they refer to the Anunnaki who fell to earth. So called Nephilim. In Hebrew, Nephal means to fall.
Yeah, and in Sumerian, Anunnaki means those who from heaven came down. Nephilim means those who either from heaven came down or who fell down or were cast
That's
down.
Right.
And in the Hebrew language.
What's happening here? When the Bible also says when this group of Nephilim came down to earth and had relations with the women of earth, at the same time, they already saw giants in the earth. It says giants were already here.
Mm-hmm.
Some. Unless I'm mistaken. I believe that's what it says. So, like Imapu, is this. Biologically, those Nephilim came to Earth. They shed their skin, which can mean a few things. They, I believe, are, believe it or not, to my interpretation, I believe they are shapeshifters. They can change the image to fit any entity, physically or biologically. So apparently, to have relations with the woman of Earth, they had to make their bodies to fit biologically, male to female. And impregnated the females, babies were born giants. Fine. That's one of the reasons why this group of Nephilim, which I believe numbered about 200, who were basically scientists, basically, originally, and the leader was named Lucifer. Now, when I say Lucifer, you gotta be very careful. I'm trying not to decipher it as a religious book, strictly scientific. So my book, whenever I mention the name Lucifer or Moses or any other name, it should be only used scientifically, not religiously. So Lucifer was a chief scientist, and I believe this group traveled the universe for eons, many, many millions of years, terraforming planets and creating life. Same thing happened to this planet Earth. But something went awry. When they came here, they came here two ways. If you listen to the interpretation of the Karya Sitkin, originally the group came here to mine for gold. They created us. We are the results of that creation. However, there's another author, another expert named Mike Kasarian. He had a slightly different theory. His theory was that the Anunnaki came to Earth roughly 55,000 years ago, and they were chased through the galaxy by their superiors for the crime they committed on this planet. I believe they visited this planet many times before and committed the same sin over and over and over again. One of the sins that they committed was to have sex with the woman of Earth. The second sin I believe they committed is to create the dinosaurs, which could not coexist with men, or men could not coexist at the same time with dinosaurs because of the size difference and survival. Now, if you read the Old Testament in Hebrew, it says that God created on a certain day, it's a Hebrew word which I'll tell you, it's called Taninim Gdolim. Taninim in Hebrew means alligators or crocodiles, and Gdolim means very large giants.
Yeah, giant lizards, dinosaurs.
Well, the word Tanin means alligator or crocodile.
All right.
Tanin
mm-hmm.
in Hebrew. And the New Testament says strictly great creatures, which can mean anything. But the Hebrew translation actually says Tanin Dulim, which means very, very large scaled animals with scales to look like dinosaurs. So apparently, if you interpret it word per word from the Old Testament, they created very, very large dinosaurs, which maybe they shouldn't have. So my belief is this is the second sin that they committed. And that's the reason why they were banished to stay on this planet.
All right. How does this link up with Roswell?
Okay. Those Nephilim, before they reached Earth, like I said, they performed the sin before. And because of that, they were chased through the galaxy by the superiors, which also from the planet Nibiru. On the way here, according to some experts, including, which I must admit, the works of Mike Tessarian, they landed on a planet called Tiamat, which is a very large planet, which used to be the original 12th planet from the sun. Basically, it was a water planet, according to legends and stories. They landed on it. The chasers assumed they were there and blew it up. That's according to Mike Tessarian. The Kaiosetian is a different theory. He claims that a few thousand years before that, which is before 55,000 years, planet Nibiru collided with Tiamat and blew it to bits. And the remaining became the asteroid belt. Now, back to Mike Tessarian with that theory. As soon as the chasers found out that the 200 Nephilim escaped punishment, landed on planet Earth, they formed a barrier around Earth based in the moon. That barrier is dialed in strictly to detect and destroy a certain DNA strain. Now remember, those Nephilim and Lucifer are DNA experts. They're scientists. They're DNA experts. So are their superiors. And their superiors were much more powerful. So what they did, they created a barrier around the Earth based on the moon. Now, the moon is approximately 250,000 miles away from the Earth. So we have to assume that this barrier is also 250,000 miles away all around the Earth. This barrier, so far until this day, according to my research, has not been penetrated by the same original 200 Nephilim, all the descendants.
All right, now this barrier, what kind of a barrier is this? And has it been detected with our scientific instruments?
I'll give you two answers. Publicly, no. But privately, yes. I believe that all the actions for the last few years, and including only a few days ago, you heard that somebody wants to blow up a small part of the moon, a little hole, a tiny hole, to detect water.
We have to take a break, Aaron, and when we come back from this break, we'll pick up right there. All right, folks, we'll be back with Aaron Kaplan, author of Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusions, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Now, when we went away for break, Aaron, you'd just gotten into explaining about this barrier. You said publicly they have not released any information about having detected this barrier, but privately you say it has been detected. So let's pick up there and move forward.
Right. Let's go a few years back. If you remember when the Soviet Union fell apart,
mm-hmm.
and the Berlin Wall fell,
yep.
At that time, the Soviet Union basically begged us to take off the hands roughly between 1,500 and 2,000 nuclear warheads. They said, please take it, because we're afraid it may wind up in third world countries. There seems to be like an entity on this planet that is run by the puppet masters. I'm not going to say the Illuminati or anything, but it seems to me a higher power beyond our governments. And I call it in the book the Seeing Eye Corporation. I believe that those nuclear warheads and many more wound up in our hands very, very peacefully. Not a shot was fired. And they wound up in secret missions in space, basically trying to bring him up to the moon. That's my theory. Now, why? Now go back to Roswell. The crash at Roswell occurred on June 24th, on June 3rd, roughly 3 p.m. Let's see.
1947.
Right. July 3rd, 47, the crash occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Now, only a few days before that, 10 days, Kenneth Arnold was flying near Mount Rainier, Washington. Now remember, it's only 10 days earlier. Very quiet story. And he's seen information of approximately 9 flying objects. Flying saucers, flying information, very quietly, in broad daylight, as if they were saying, hey, here we are. My theory is those 9 flying objects that Kenneth Arnold saw, observed from his business plane, were on a mission. I believe that those UFOs were on the way to the moon for one purpose only, to try to destroy that barrier.
All right, now, those UFOs that he saw, were they extraterrestrial or were they terrestrial?
My belief is there were extraterrestrials. However, these extraterrestrials did not come at that time from outer space. They came from inner space.
So they've been living inside the planet.
That's correct.
All right. Now, why were they headed to the moon to blow up something on the moon?
They tried to blow up the original power plant that originates that barrier, which is based on the moon. Their superiors installed roughly 55,000 years ago.
And the purpose of this barrier is to block who or what?
The purpose of that barrier is to banish from the universe the original 200 Nephilim and their descendants as punishment for their sins, for what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They're banished on this planet. They cannot leave. And that's what terrifies those Nephilim that are still here and could not leave. They're terrified of the date 2012 themselves.
Why?
Well, number one, theoretically, they're not human. They may look like us sometimes, but they're not human.
Okay.
If this planet is destroyed, what do they do? If they're from a different dimension, or they're spirits, or whatever they are, as funny as it seems, they're sure they can float in space, but for how long? Eventually, they will perish. So they're going to try their best to escape this planet before calamity may happen.
Okay. So was it one of those nine UFOs that crashed at Roswell?
Well, we are saying one. But apparently there's no evidence that at least six or maybe nine crashes occurred at or near Roswell. A town of Corona, and in the countryside of New Mexico. There were more than one, from evidence that we have now. That's what led me to believe, since there were more than one, I believe there were at least six that were verified, and there was only 10 days after the sighting at Mount Rainier by Kenneth Arnold. It can be a coincidence. It's too good to be true. So I'm trying to connect the dots that way. I believe I've done it right.
All right. Now, did these nine that Kenneth Arnold saw, according to your research and analysis, succeed in their mission to go to the moon and to destroy the power plants that power this this barrier that they cannot get through? Did they succeed in that?
I'm afraid not. The mission was a disaster. It failed immensely. That's why it came crashing down at Roswell. And the question is, why Roswell? I believe there are two answers for that. The question to why is nuclear fusion, nuclear fuel. And the cause of the crash is DNA. That's the key word, DNA.
Okay, well, explain that. I don't understand why that would cause their crash.
Okay. When these entities headed toward the moon, like I explained before, that barrier is built, it's an invisible barrier, it'll destroy anything that's honed in on a certain DNA. Now remember, these people themselves are DNA experts. They're manipulators of DNA for millions of years. So imagine what the superiors can do. That barrier is built to search, detect, and destroy a certain code of DNA. And that barrier is built to hone in on the codes of DNA of those 200 Nephilim. Like a blood type. Type O, type B, B plus, B minus. It's precise to a certain code. That's exactly what keeps the 200 people banished on this planet. They cannot leave. Other aliens can come and go. Other Anunnakis can come and go, but not these 200. That barrier is built to hone in, search and destroy the DNA of those 200 Nephilim.
All right, now, so that would presuppose then that these 200 Nephilim are different from all the other Anunnaki, all the other, they are genetically different from the other Anunnaki or Elohim or Cherubim, Seraphim. This would be a separate race that's different from all the rest of those.
No. Let's say we have people here on Earth. You go to the hospital, you take a blood test, you register a blood test, your blood test, they check your DNA, they make a track of your DNA. Sending has been done with those 200 Nephilim by their superiors from the whole planet.
Okay, so this barrier has, in whatever's generating it, has encoded the specific DNA of each of those 200.
Exactly.
Okay.
Correct, exactly. They cannot leave this planet. Anybody else on the planet, whether it's Enki or the god Enlil or wherever they are, or the friends, can come and go whenever they want to. No problemo. But those 200 have been banished here by the DNA code. That's the key.
Now, where is this installation that's generating this barrier? Where is it located on the moon?
I couldn't tell you. It's somewhere on the moon. Now, I've been following many articles published by many people. I've also read the latest book by Richard G. Hoagland, Dark Mission. And he's also saying that even when our astronauts were up there, they tried to drill to the moon's surface, they couldn't, as if it's made of steel. They perform many sound tests on the moon, vibration tests, and it seems that the moon keeps vibrating after the motion of the test has stopped. There's a possibility, as crazy as it sounds, that the moon may be slightly hollow. That means that it may be, allegedly, may be artificial, which will confirm why it's up there doing a certain job. It's very tricky.
So is this installation on the moon occupied, or is it purely robotic?
I couldn't tell you. As far as I'm concerned, if you figure those people are at least have an edge of us of 45 million years, according to the Zachariah Sitkin, 45 million years of science is a long time, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that they require anybody out there to be there for that purpose. However, they may be there anyway, doing other things. I couldn't tell you.
All right. Now, the astronauts, when they went there, did not seem to have a crash and burn experience. It didn't seem to bother them. So apparently those astronauts were not descendants of any of these 200.
Uh-oh, you may have said something taboo. Let me explain. As I understand, some of the astronauts, some of them, especially the ones that walked on the surface of the moon, I'm not saying all of them, there are rumors that one or two of them or more are classified as 32nd degree Masons. Okay? Now, I've also read many articles and read many reports that when those astronauts returned to Earth, they seem to be very disoriented and have to go through a long, long time, at least a month or two, of what's called debriefings. Okay?
All right, listen, we have a break coming up in about 10 seconds here. So before we get into that, this is a good place for us to halt. When we come back, we'll pick up with the astronauts and their debriefings and the deal about being Masons. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Aaron Kaplan. He is the author of a book not yet released. It is going to be released in July. Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion. Aaron, I had mentioned the fact that it doesn't seem that our astronauts encountered any ill effects from this barrier, and you were about to explain that some of them may have.
Yes, I'm afraid my next few words will be kind of cruel, but just listen very carefully. There's a possibility, a very distinct possibility, that some of our astronauts have a certain blood type, okay? Some of them, I'm not going to mention any names, at least one or two, are known to be 32nd 33rd degree Masons, which, according to stories and rumors, belong to the group called the Illuminati, Bilderbergs, whatever. Supposedly, they are our controllers, puppet masters. It's also very possible that some of the astronauts are being used with their knowledge or without their knowledge as guinea pigs. Let me explain. Since those Nephilim came to Earth 55,000 years ago, they mixed in pretty well with their, you know, with our genes and DNA, blended in through the ages. It'll be very hard to find anybody that's still pure human DNA. So most of us right now are pretty well mixed up with the alien genes, pretty strongly. However, like I said earlier, that barrier is built to stop only a certain code DNA. Now, what if, allegedly, what if, somehow, a certain DNA code, blood type, was injected into certain astronauts as a test to see what happens when they reach the moon? I know it sounds preposterous, but I'm using the word allegedly. What if? Because some of them, at their return to Earth, were very incoherent. They need very, very long debriefings. And afterwards, they seem to be, I'm going to say the word, slightly disturbed, kind of frightened, numb. They didn't speak much. So something is going on here. Either they've seen something there that they can't discuss, or something happened to them physically. But I believe that a few of them, especially the ones that walk on the actual moon, some may have had the DNA changed very simply, through blood transfusion. It's possible.
And what would be the purpose of a test like that?
Pardon me?
What would be the purpose of a test like that?
To test the barrier. To test the barrier. What effect it will have on a being carrying that DNA, the DNA brand of gene that belongs to the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
If it will stop them, or it's going to hurt them anyway. And that could be the reason. Many people are asking, and also on YouTube, many questions are being asked. Why did the men go back to the moon after all those years? Why didn't we go back to the moon? We hear stories, financial stories, technical problems. But the question always is, why didn't men return to the moon?
Well, it is a great mystery because of a lot of reasons, but one real reason that it's a mystery is that the next two missions to the moon, the next two Apollo missions, after they canceled it, they said, that's it, we're not going back. That was Apollo 17 was the last one, officially. But NASA had already paid for two additional missions that were supposed to have been flown. The crews had already been selected. The next mission, Apollo 18, that one not only had been paid for, but had been built and was ready to go. And they just canceled it and said, we're not going back. Now, it was actually flown, not as Apollo 18, but they did fly to go up and meet with the Russians up there in space at one of the Mir stations. I forget which Mir station it was. You know, they only had one at a time as far as we know, but they've had a succession of Mir stations. And so Apollo 18 did fly, but not as Apollo 18. And but that was a great mystery, a tremendous mystery, because they already had two missions paid for, and all of the Apollo 18 rocket was built, and they had the crews already selected and trained and ready to go. And then just suddenly said, well, that's it. We're not going back to the moon. So why do you think we didn't go back?
I believe the reason that I just mentioned, it seems to be that certain that the real mission to the moon could not be completed successfully, especially to fly past the moon. Something is up there that upsets the astronauts that approach the moon, or especially that work on the moon. And I believe this is also the main reason right now what's happening with mass abductions. It seems to be that those entities, when they perform those abductions, are looking for a human being with a certain DNA type that they can use to reverse engineer their sensors, their own DNA, so they can use to penetrate the barrier undetected. That's what I believe is going on.
Well, now, if your theory is correct, that means that unless and until this DNA situation can be solved, there will be no human flights to Mars.
You're very, very right. You're very correct.
All right. Now, we have had on this show guests that have some really intense credentials. One of them is one of the scientists who has developed some of the deepest, darkest programs in the black world, the world of black projects, and has tons of patents in his name. And he says that we have at least one base. I can't remember if he said we had two, but at least one base on the moon with humans working there. Now, what would you think about that according to your theory?
One answer, I would say it's very possible, and I'll tell you how. It's allegedly rumored that before World War II, the Germans, Nazi Germany, signed a pact with certain aliens, which I believe were the Nephilim. At the same time, I believe that Truman and Eisenhower, Roosevelt, signed the same pact with the same entities without one side knowing that the other side signed the pact. Now, what if we also signed a pact with another race of aliens, okay? And that race is trying to help us, but they must choose human beings, check their DNA, they must choose the blood type, make sure that it doesn't resemble anything like the Aryanite type. It's very possible. I mean, it sounds far-fetched to us, but you have to remember that we talk about races that are millions of years advanced, way ahead of us. To them, it's child's play. So if you change the DNA structure or the blood type of certain human beings, it can be done very easily.
Well, that would certainly not be the first time that these gods, if you wish to refer to them that way, have selected people based on their DNA. We'll talk about that just a little bit when we come back, and then we'll open up the telephone lines for you to call in with your questions and comments for Aaron Kaplan. We'll be back right after this. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Now, don't start calling in yet because you don't know the number. And if you've got it pre-programmed into your telephone, it's not going to work. All right? So I'll put the number we're using tonight on the screen in just a moment, and I will announce it when we open up the telephone lines. But don't start calling in just yet because I want to talk with Aaron for just a minute here before we open the phone lines, and then I'll tell you the number, and I'll put it on the screen. Aaron, I said, you know, this you were describing aliens sort of selecting people based on their DNA for work on the moon. And I said that would certainly not be the first time. In Genesis, the story about Noah and his family, some people think he was chosen because he was a righteous man. Well, he, according to Genesis, was righteous. But that isn't why he and his family were chosen. They were chosen because they were perfect in their genealogy, in their generations. They were not mixed blood. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so they survived the flood in Genesis. And all the other air breathers who were hybrids did not. And but there is a there's an interesting statement that even after the flood, you still had the Nephilim around. So apparently, they don't have to breathe air.
The Nephilim on our planet, basically, they are from a different dimension. They can take any form they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They actually, I believe, from a third or fourth dimension. Well, we are second, third dimension beings. When the flood came, the deluge, God, big G or small g, with Enlil or Enki, whoever they were, the Bible specifically says that all those in the flesh will perish, in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
The flesh pertains to us, the little people, the human beings. But the being not in the flesh, which of course means the Nephilim, even though they change their appearance to look like humans, but in actuality they are not.
Mm-hmm.
They can survive many ways. Theoretically, they can become ghosts. They can live miles and miles underground for infinite time without any supply of nourishment or whatever. It was over, they just resurface. See, they are not in the flesh. That's the key.
All right. I'm going to open up the telephone lines, and the telephone number that we're using is now appearing on your screen if you're watching KSS TV. For those of you listening by radio or cell phone or internet radio, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And the telephone line is open. As always, if you happen to live outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you can call the number. It will work. It works internationally. But if you don't want to pay that international long-distance call, then you can use our flash message feature. Just go to my website. And at kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down, you will see where it says flash message, and just click that, and you can send me a message. It will then begin to flash on my screen over here. That's why we call it flash message, and I'll read it, and we will ask our guest to respond to it. But if you live in the United States or you live in Canada, please use the telephone number that we've provided for you. Again, it is 623-444-5889. Aaron, a lot of people out there view, as you do, 2012 as sort of December the 21st, 2012, an ominous date. And there are people that view it only as sort of a an end of this era and this sort of paradigm of thinking that we're under and the beginning of a new one. And they talk about us ascending in our consciousness. Other people think it's not going to be anything really at all. It'll be kind of like Y2K. Now, you've come to the conclusion that it's going to be a rather ominous time, and your book is all about trying to alert people to what you think is coming. We're going to take a telephone call, and when we come back from that call, after we talk with this caller, I'd like for you to sort of address that idea as to why you think 2012 is going to be apocalyptic. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. This is Ben from Hollywood. I spoke with you before.
I remember Benjamin Harris.
Yes, sir. What a good mind. August 23rd, right?
And I remember because, and I use your name because you are an artist. You produce animations and films and so your name is out there.
I especially wanted to call because I just put up about 20 videos with a whole lot of information about the Nephilim on YouTube under Ben A. Harris. And there I've captured about 8 or 9 photographs. I used the NASA video footage, and I got stills off of that and cleaned them up so you can see a lot of cities on Jupiter and its moons, especially on the North Pole of Jupiter, a lot of big cities, a lot of cities on Venus, a lot of hillside homes on Venus, people on Mercury, found a tree on Mercury. Most people on Mercury are primitive humans, live in the ground with the apes. And on Mars, you got people, the advanced society, living in the planet. And on Jupiter, you've got mostly living on the moons. Now, the moons are full of Nephilim, along with Venus. Venus and Jupiter are linked up. The Earth and Mars were linked up, similar civilizations. The moon is covered with millions of little teeny humans about a foot tall. They're everywhere. If you go back to those old videos on YouTube of that astronaut, I believe his name was John Glenn, and really get close to the screen and put that magnifier on, you can see the little humans crawling all over the place. So there's lots of stuff going on. The moon has giant humans as well as 7 different races mining helium from the mines to create UFO fuel. The whole universe here in our night sky is populated with billions of humans of all different types.
All right. Well, let's ask Aaron his comment on that. Aaron, what do you think about it?
The Nephilim are all wearing cowboy hats.
Do what?
The Nephilim are all wearing cowboy hats. I got videos. You can see them.
I will have to see that. Okay. Aaron, what do you think about all of that?
Well, you may be partially right. I do listen to many experts, especially one expert that I believe that you will agree with most of the time, too, which is Richard C. Hoagland.
Yeah.
According to his research and the pictures that he provides the whole world, they're phenomenal. Slides from NASA that have been, you know, sneaked out to him through different channels. And they also show many structures on the moon. Some built from solid objects, many from glass. So something is up there. Something. It seems to be that lately the Chinese, the Japanese, even India is very, very, very itchy to go to the moon.
Oh, yeah, I think that's strange. Ben, thanks for the call, man. I do appreciate it. And I'll take a look at those videos. I want to see the cowboy hats. That's something I had not heard of before. All right, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Aaron, why is December the 21st, 2012, apocalyptic in your view?
There are a few things, but I'll start with the Mayan calendar. As strange as it seems, so far the Mayan calendar has been right on, so far, right on. All its predictions and so forth. It supposedly it ends on the date of December 21st, 2012. Nobody knows why. And in their god, which you call, I can't even pronounce his name,
Quetzalcoatl.
Quetzalcoatl said that he will return on that date. Now, that date is very significant for another reason. The 12th planet, Nibiru, that the highest Sitkin talked so much about, is due to arrive approximately at that period of time. Approximately. If it's correct, but only if it's true, when that planet arrives near Earth, it doesn't have to come too close. Even many thousands of miles will cause calamities, heat, storms, at the least. But that's only one. The other thing is, it's weird due for galactic alignment that may be causing very strange and dangerous gravity effects on the Earth. That's when all the planets are aligned almost in a straight line. And you can imagine like little magnets pulling steel ball, tiny steel pellets, from one side. It's going to start rolling toward the magnets. It may happen, we're not sure. Then we're going to enter what's called black matter. This happens roughly every 26,500 years, from legend, from writing in Sumerian tablets with ciphers. Now, that black matter is also called black axiom, or black energy. Basically, what it is try to imagine planet Earth going through a sandblaster of steel pellets. You know what's going to be left? Nothing. It's like a sandblasting paint of a wall. And finally, weird you, I read very recently that the sun lost roughly 200 to 220% of its gravity in the last 3.5 years. And that loss is rising drastically with a curve. I also heard 4 days ago on another radio program by the same person again, he's a very famous person, Richard G. Hoagland, that the planet Earth is moving away roughly 6 to 10 inches a year away from the sun, which will explain side by side to go with also gravity of the sun. If the sun is losing gravity, then of course slowly our orbit will be pulling away from the sun. Unfortunately, if the sun loses gravity, something else can happen, which may be the worst thing of them all. The gamma rays that originate on the sun, whether they contain gas or matter, they do weigh. They have a certain amount of weight. And if the sun loses gravity, those gamma rays would be able to penetrate space deeper, because you're going to have less force holding them back. And if those gamma rays come close to us, we are goners. I read a book a few months ago. I forgot the name of the book. Or the name of the author, we actually predict certain gamma rays are going to hit us within about 4 to 5 years, which is, of course, after December 21st, 2012. But certain things are starting to happen, which are not going to be very conducive to our life. Let's put it this way.
Okay. So, December the 21st, 2012, at 11:11 a.m., and it's at a specific point that I can't remember exactly where it is, but it's not in the United States, way to the east of us. But at that point is when it's all supposed to happen. Where are you going to be, and what are you going to be doing?
Oh, me?
Mm-hmm.
If that day comes, I believe that most of us will already start seeing the effects much, much earlier. As a matter of fact, I believe that certain things are already happening now, slowly, slowly.
Okay, but on that day, where are you going to be, and what are you going to be doing?
Hopefully, I'll be, something's going to be, in the winter, it's a cold day, maybe I'll be in a ski lodge on top of the mountain, and eyeballing planet Nibiru comes straight toward us.
So do you think Earth is going to survive? Do you think the planet itself will survive this event?
In one way or another, unless we're hit directly, physically, by another planet, it'll survive the event. But the question is how and how much life will be left on it. I'm going to say one thing. It won't be the same as now. I hear stories that the December 21st, 2012 is going to be change of atmosphere, change of feelings, with alignment of Scorpio and et cetera. And, you know, the atmosphere will change and human beings going to behave differently. I don't think this is going to happen. It's going to be physical change one way or the other. And I don't think it's going to be for the better.
Do you think that when all of this is over, Earth is going to be habitable for humans, or is it going to look like Mars?
Well, apparently we've survived those calamities before, roughly ever 26,500 years, but certain life didn't survive.
Mm-hmm.
So something has survived. The question is, I believe it's not going to be up to us. I'll tell you why. It's part of my theory. Those beings from the planet Nibiru, the Anunnaki, that's supposed to approach us, remember, their cities on that planet, their own cities are protected by domes. What if they have the technology, that's far-fetched, of course, to install those domes instantaneously around anything? I believe that their whole planet is one giant dome all around it.
You think this planet has a dome around it?
Planet Nibiru.
Oh, okay.
A protective barrier.
Mm-hmm.
What if they know what may happen to us, but only what if? And they decide at the 11th hour somehow to give us a protective dome when the planet approaches. What if? I know it sounds very far-fetched, but it's the only way I can see to prevent a total calamity.
Well, maybe there's not going to be any preventing it. Maybe it's going to be a total calamity, and maybe we're going to be sort of blasted back into the Stone Age.
It could very well be. It may have happened before. If you remember, some years ago, somebody took a picture inside the Temple of Abydos.
Yeah.
And there's a placard on the wall that very distinctly shows a helicopter, a submarine, a flying saucer, and a tank.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are at least 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 years old. Now the question is, where do those tanks, submarines, and helicopters come from? Somebody had them before. That means they were here before.
Mm-hmm.
So life seems to come and go. Certain waves regenerate itself. But we're not sure exactly how strong it'll regenerate itself or how bad the damage will be. Maybe on a slight.
There's a series that's on television, on cable TV now, and it's called After Humans, or After Humans Are Gone. And the whole deal is what will the Earth look like 10 years after there are no humans? And what will it look like 50 years, 100 years, 1,000 years, 10,000 years? And that's what they look at. One of the interesting things when you watch this is that all of these great structures that are built all over the planet right now, every large city has these great structures. They deteriorate, they rust, evidence of them, most evidence of their existence disappears within, a few thousand years. Because they're made out of things that oxidize. They rust. They rot. They fall. They go back into the ground. And watching that has given me it has given some credibility in my mind to the theory that perhaps there were advanced civilizations here in the past, and all evidence or most evidence of them has just dwindled away back into the dust. Could be, and it could be that we are just now crawling out of the pit from the last time.
Well, let me give you another theory. In the book of Genesis, if you read the first chapter, it says simply in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Then earth was without void. Then God said, let it be light, etc. Then let's make the grass, the trees, creatures, fish, man, whatever. This is a very simple explanation in my mind of terraforming. Terraforming a planet in simple English.
Well, yeah, because it says right there in verse 2 that the English translations are way out of whack. It says in English, in the English translations, and the earth became, and the earth was without form and void, but the Hebrew word is hayah, and it means became. And the earth became tohu vabohu.
Right.
Absolutely formless and void. It was not in the shape of a sphere rotating in space. It was blasted into a big mass of junk.
So what I'm theorizing is, after the last calamity, how did our planet become so beautiful once more?
Well, we'll have to get to that when we come back from this break. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this, and the telephone line will be closed. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Aaron Kaplan. Aaron, we were talking about the fact that in Genesis it actually talks about, first of all, that first day of creation happens starting in verse 3. And it says in verse 1, in the beginning, the gods, Elohim, plural, created the heavens and the earth. So the earth existed prior to the first day of those 6 days. In verse 2, the earth is totally destroyed. We don't know how, we don't know by what means. But then all of that 6 days is the story of it reforming into a planet and things beginning to appear, water and solid land and plants and animals and all of that beginning to reappear. And, you know, there you have a story. Whether people should believe it or not, that's up to them. But there you have a story in an ancient manuscript that lots of people call a holy book that talks about the very thing that you're describing. Are you still with me, Aaron?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
The problem is that it's very easy to decipher it if you look at it as a science story, as a scientific book, not a religious book. If you follow the steps, maybe one step is not in line, but most of the steps are describing perfect steps to terraforming a planet.
Mm-hmm.
Step by step. It's a little bit of magic. Light, sun, heat, ground, trees, grass, creatures crawling around, fish, frogs, great creatures, and in the end, when it's all ready, here's mankind.
But the point I'm focusing on is the idea of the Earth going through these destructions and then being rebuilt. That's not foreign. That's not new. That's not. I mean, there's evidence right there in Genesis. It actually comes right out and says it, that has happened in the past. And so it could happen in 2012. I don't think, now this is just my personal opinion, and this show's not about my opinion, but I'm going to throw this out and then we'll work on it. I don't think that the planet is going to, I don't think we're going through a planet buster situation. And I think there is going to be, whatever happens, there is going to be human life still on the planet. And but if we go through a really bad situation and human life survives, if that happens, then we are looking at having to crawl out of the Stone Age again.
You're correct. And the calamity that you described a few minutes ago, what happened on Earth, it's very similar to what may happen, I said may happen, if the Earth goes through what's called dark energy or black axiom of black matter. If it's correct, some scientists say that along the Virginia coast, down south, if you go even a quarter mile in the ocean, not too deep, you can find black remnants of like little tiny, tiny metal black carbon pellets. They claim that these are remnants of our planet in the past passing through the black energy, black matter. That could be what the Bible describes as the terrible calamity that took place, or it also could be the one event. Now, it's possible the one event when the planet Tiamat blew up and all its remnants that became the asteroid belt, some of the remnants may have hit us head on, causing the calamity. Could be one or the other that happened. It's possible.
All right. Now, your book goes into the idea that there is a sort of universal plot that involves governing bodies. Explain that to me a little bit. How? Because look, Hugo Chavez and Barack Obama have very, very different views of how the world operates or how it should operate. Ahmadinejad and Barack Obama, Ahmadinejad and about 100% of the rest of the governing leaders on the planet have different views. I don't know anybody that agrees with him. How is it with so vastly different views of how the world should operate in the capital of each country on the planet, vastly different views from every other capital. How is it that there could be a plot or a conspiracy, if you will, between the governing bodies on something so massive as this?
Here's my theory. It's not a conspiracy. It's survival of the fittest. The survival, basically the survival of the original banished 200 Nephilim here and their descendants, which are controlled. Let's call them the Seeing Eye Corporation. If you remember, President Bush had a great saying a few years ago, which is called order out of chaos. It seems to be there's an entity that is pulling invisible strings. Now we have the American government, the Soviet Union government, the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Israelis, the Iranians, the French, whatever. Each one has a government. But if you follow world events, especially lately, it's as if somebody, somewhere, is causing events to be activated to confuse the population, to take attention away from what's really going on. That's what I call order out of chaos. Keep people pointing one direction. It's like a musician on stage. Performs the magic act. He's a beautiful assistant next to him, so you watch her do her tricks, but you don't watch the musician perform his tricks with the other hand. And here with his finger, the trick is done. What I'm saying is, somebody's controlling world events to certain means to an end or to certain end. Right now, my belief is, certain end is done very quietly, especially lately, I'm going to use the word, by microbiologists. There are many steps along the way. Computers, silicon, and other things, but now it's reached the last stage of microbiology, which involves DNA. If somebody's looking for something, so attention is taken to another side, but somebody's controlling the whole game very efficiently, very quietly. As you notice lately, the Soviet Union is very quiet. Things are happening, major things. But certain countries that 20, 30 years ago would have, the Khrushchev at the UN with the shoe and Cuban Missile Crisis, suddenly it's gone. Everybody's yelling, but there's no real, it's as if all the yelling is like one big act to divert attention for what's to come.
All right. Now, just based on what you're saying, there would have to be people in each of these governments who, first of all, know about the fact that strings exist, know who has the power to pull them, and are responding when they are pulled. That means that there would have to be people in each government that are quite aware of all of this.
That's correct.
All right. So are you? Would that be the presidents? Would that be the prime ministers, the kings, the queens, the senators, the congress people? Who would know about the string pullers and the strings?
Way above the president, it's way above prime ministers. I'll give you one example. I mentioned earlier that some of those Nephilim, not some, all of them, are shapeshifters. Do you remember Princess Diane when she died in a car accident?
Yeah, sure.
Everybody said, you know, she may be pregnant, come with this child from Middle Eastern country, maybe in a love affair, ta-da-dam. I don't think so. If you followed her career, watch the videotapes of the last few months before she died. I'm going to say something, and just think about it. The last few months before she died, she very loudly on the air, in front of newspaper reporters, in front of video cameras. Like Warner Wolf says, play the tapes. She said she accused the royal family of being freaking lizards in public.
Yes, she did. Yes, that is a fact.
Thank you. So something is going on, which many people do not connect the dots the right way. She's only one key in my story. There are many more. If you connect the dots the right way, you become astonished in what's going on with the royal family. Just only one listen. I'm not going to go any further.
All right. Well, let's dive into this for a couple of minutes here. This whole idea that the royal family, and not just the royal family in Great Britain, but other royal families around the world, the idea that they are of reptilian bloodline was put forward, I think, first, maybe not first, but certainly most publicly, by David Icke. And David Icke, said rather openly and forcefully that that all of these royals are in fact reptilians and shapeshifters. What do you think about that?
Simple answer. Are you familiar with the professor that died in England, John Mack from
yes.
Harvard University?
Yes.
The movie Intruders was based on his research. But again, 2 to 3 months before he died, he started very heavily, started to investigate aliens with reptilian backgrounds. And he said he's going to make a breakthrough about the reptilian families. That's what he said. So he goes to England, and mysteriously, he steps off the sidewalk and gets hit by a car. Now let me ask you a question. What are the odds of a college professor with his knowledge suddenly stepping off a sidewalk in England or walk and get hit by a car?
I don't know what those odds would be, but I understand what you're saying. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on final approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show, and my guest this evening is Aaron Kaplan. Aaron, have you delved into David Icke's writings and his seminars and so forth about this information about the royals having a reptilian bloodline?
Yes, I watched a few of the tapes, but not too many of them. But I do know his basic point of view.
And do you agree with it?
At this point, I believe so.
All right. Now, one of the interesting things that came up, and this was one of the major networks that did this chart, and they put it on the air, and it showed up then in print and on the internet. During the George Bush's reelection campaign, he was running, of course, against John Kerry, and they did a genealogy of George Bush. They did a genealogy of John Kerry, and I think Richard Cheney as well. All of them trace their bloodline traces back to the historical figure Vlad Dracul, whom we know as Dracula, And for those of you who think that Dracula is all fiction, you need to go back to school. Vlad Dracul was the son of Dracul, and he was the ruler of an area that included what we call Transylvania. That's all historical fact. Dracula means little Dracul, and Dracul means dragon. The two candidates were both descendants of Dracula. I don't know if you were aware of that, but both of them are descendants of Dracula, at least according to this chart that was done. I can't remember. I don't know if it was ABC, CBS, CNN. One of the major networks did this and put it on the air, and then it hit the Internet. Were you aware of that?
I became aware of it in a very strange way. You may recall. You remember before the last election with John Kerry? He was in a college somewhere, and students were asking him questions. One student came to the podium and tried to ask him a question regarding that matter, also whether he belongs to the Skull and Bone Society together with Bush. Remember what happened to him?
I remember there was a dust-up about that, but...
He got zapped. The cop jumped on him.
Oh, yeah.
Zapped him with a zapper, and they carried him away.
Yeah.
And none of the students came to his aid, none of them. He was going to ask the same question. They zapped him, and they carried him out quick. Why? That's when I started to look into it, on that day. Something is going on. With some truth in it. Some truth, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. I had forgotten about it until you just mentioned it. I remember that when that happened, I did comment on that on the basis of, hey, you know, wait a minute, time out. What's the deal here with freedom of speech?
Right.
And, you know, I do tell people quite frequently that on this show we believe in freedom of speech. And you either use it or lose it. And if you don't think that's the case, watch what's happening in Iran. And, here we have a veneer of freedom of speech. But if you say things, for instance, if we say things on this show that someone out there thinks is a little bit too edgy, either your line will go dead or my line will go dead or the video feed will die. Or the radio feed will die, we get interfered with because it's only a veneer of freedom of speech. Nobody's shooting us over it yet, but, it's just a veneer. I remember that incident. I sure do. So now this fellow... Vlad Dracul, actually the family name was not Dracula, and it was not Dracul. The family name was Basarab, and Vlad Dracul, who we know in history as Dracula, was born in what today we call Romania. He was born in Sighișoara, and was twice the ruler of Wallachia, which included Transylvania. He was not a vampire as described by Bram Stoker. He was a bloodthirsty maniac. And he had people impaled on stakes by the tens of thousands. And he was really, really nasty. Amazingly, though, it's not just John Kerry and George Bush that are descendants of, if that chart was correct. It's also most of the royal houses of Europe are descendants of this guy. Now, do you think that there is a sort of a kingmaker operation that decides who's going to get to run for president in the United States?
Definitely yes, and I'll tell you why. I was watching, if you're familiar, the Sean Hannity show before the election a few years ago. And he had a guest on called Dick Morris. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah.
Right. This guy is a genius. He knows everything. He said one thing, and I will never forget. He said, Hillary is going to run for the presidency. She's going to be in the running. But she's going to somehow withdraw or get out at the end. She will not be in the end running. He was so right. He knew. This guy knows. He also predicted many war events in the past.
Well, yeah, he is excessively perceptive, and but the question is he just looking at various polls and charts and signals, or does he actually have inside information to the group that decides who's going to be the next president, if that group exists?
I believe that he has direct information to the inside. However, he's like a middleman. He's playing a very smart game, nonchalant. He's giving the stories in a way as in never to suspect him as being one of them. He does it very cleverly. Because I remember another incident years ago. Do you remember Clinton was president?
Yeah, but guess what? We're going to run out of time, so you'll have to tell this real quick.
He was in the air, and he said, President Clinton does not know how to tell the American people that it is life on Mars, real life. And he said that on the air. I remember that.
Dick Morris said that?
Yes. President Clinton has problems telling the American people there is life on Mars. And a few days later, guess what happened?
What?
Monica Lewinsky and Paul Jones to distract everything.
Wow.
Right afterwards. Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, just stay on the line with me for a moment. We have run up against the end of the show. Fascinating. We got a preview of what's coming in the book. And again, the name of the book is Deep Analysis, Frightening Conclusion, by Aaron Kaplan. All right, folks, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My time is gone. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.